listening to Inside MD Sports Radio. Here are your hosts, Mike Brody and Seth Hoffman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Inside MD Sports Radio, along with Seth Hoffman. I'm Mike Brody. We got a lot of football in last week. We're going to talk a little basketball today because, I mean, really the only newsworthy event, the only actual event that occurred since we last spoke to you was the release of the Maui Invitational Tournament bracket. Now, we knew who all the teams were, you know, going back over a year, I think. But now we know how the lineup looks, and it appears, there's no official word on it, but it appears that Maryland is the quote-unquote one seed for this tournament. We're not 100% sure. There's no seeding for the tournament, but we assume since they're playing Chaminade in the first round that they are, in fact, the one seed, because Chaminade is just, you know, the host, and they're usually the weakest team in this field. Although they've been known to challenge teams, and you know, if ask Virginia, they beat number one Virginia, you know, 25, 30 years ago. And so they can be a bit of a burden in this tournament.
So what the schedule itself? Yeah. Now we're talking here early August, so basketball schedule might seem a little mundane, but we covered football last week, and we'll get to basketball recruiting a bit later in the show when we'll have on Inside MD Sports owner and editor and head honcho Jeff
Man in charge
to talk basketball recruiting, and I'll break down some of what I saw in July. But I think, you know, to break up a little the monotony of midsummer with camp opening in a couple of days for football, let's just touch on a little bit of basketball.
And we kind of got into it a little bit towards the end of our show last week with Patrick Stevens, who I think enjoys this as much as we do with trying to piece together all the non-conference parts. And we got a big chunk of it last week. You know, we don't know exactly who they're going to play, but we know the way that the matchups could shake out. And I think it's pretty favorable for Maryland to at least get to the title game of this tournament. You're assuming that they will beat Chaminade. And, you know, the one good thing about getting Chaminade in the first round is that if they lose that game, it doesn't count. Essentially, it does not happen in the eyes of the NCAA tournament committee.
You see, you could look at an opening round game against Chaminade two ways. One, you're all but guaranteed a spot in the semifinals. But on the other hand, game doesn't count. Right. So while Maryland might not have the same trouble, or not trouble, but the same kind of down-to-the-wire tournament resume, so to speak, as it has last year. At least, you know, a lot of people expect them to make the tournament like they have, you know, throughout Gary's tenure, a bit more easily this year. But maybe in a year like last year, you look at it and say, you know, that's one opportunity missed to get a decent out-of-conference win, top 100 RPI, top 150, just something more to add to the resume. Not necessarily that'll come into play this year, but it's kind of the flip side of playing a Chaminade in the first round.
And you look at the past tournaments, Maryland's always had a ton to gain from at least from the opponents they've played, not necessarily from beating them, just simply by playing them. You look at this past year, beating Michigan State was extremely important because it allowed them to play Georgetown and Gonzaga, strengthening that schedule. The previous year, playing UCLA, Missouri wasn't too strong, but playing UCLA was helpful to the strength of the schedule. The year before, when they won the 2K Sports Classic, beating Michigan State and beating St. John's. You know, just they've had a lot to gain over the years in these tournaments. This year, though, at max, only two games are counting. And, you know, if worse comes to worse, you know, you wouldn't expect Colorado to get all the way to the title game. But you get a situation where you're playing Colorado and Vandy in your tournament. Vandy was barely a top 100 RPI team last year. Colorado was sub 200 and has been a cellar dweller in the Big 12 for, you know, forever. And so you really don't want to come out of this trip empty-handed. It's a pretty weak Maui field for the Maui. The Maui's usually at least in the top three of the tournaments. This year, it might not even be a top five in terms of overall field.
Mm-hmm. While you mentioned that, you know, Vandy wasn't that great last year, and Cincinnati as well. I mean, if you just look at the numbers for Cincinnati, I mean, you have a team that was, you know, 84th in the RPI and just
a team that had a tournament spot, right? You know, ready to be cemented with about a week to go in the season, then kind of stumbled towards the end.
Right, but in any event, they were just barely over 500 last year. But I think should Maryland pass Chaminade, which, you know, I think everybody is expecting and not really even thinking about. You know, Vandy or Cincinnati lurks in the second round, and each one of those games is actually pretty interesting. Yeah. One, obviously, with Cincinnati, you have the Lance Stevenson storyline there. Obviously, he's playing for Cincinnati or will play, assuming everything's kosher with the NCAA and he gets admitted and gets cleared to play in time. That's one storyline I know a lot of people are looking for. But on the other hand, Vanderbilt, you know, while they were 95 in the RPI last year, they return. I mean, they return every one of their scorers, everybody who contributed points.
You think the storyline of the tournament might be Maryland turning all their guys. Vandy probably returns a higher percentage of their scoring, and I think more minutes coming back as well.
They return every single one of their guys last year who scored, and the only guy they lost played 17 minutes a game, and, you know, it was an okay score, but what was he?
I think 5 points a game.
Yeah, about 5 points a game right there. You know, you got guys like, you know, A.J. Ogilvie is one of them, and then the big center, and then those other guys that have contributed scores all down the list. So that's a team that...
And Vandy's a program that has been pretty strong throughout the decade and you know, had a pretty down year last year, but you expect, especially with all these guys returning, that they at least contend for a tournament spot this year.
So the second round, I mean, there's a storyline, and then there's a tough team on the other end. You know, if I had to make a guess right now, Vanderbilt looks like a team that could surprise a lot of people early on and could kind of go through this tournament and provide a dangerous matchup for Maryland, especially with Ogilvie in the middle when Maryland's breaking in a couple new post guys and has, you know, struggled with size last year.
Yeah. And, let's look down at the bottom of this bracket a little bit, or I guess the twos and threes. I guess the two in this bracket is Arizona? Is that who we're going to
say? Wisconsin? Arizona.
Wisconsin or Arizona?
Well, Wisconsin, take your pick. It's between Wisconsin, Arizona, and Gonzaga. What do you think? Gonzaga had the highest RPI coming out of last season at 26. Wisconsin was at 45, both tournament teams. Arizona, 62.
Gonzaga had the best season of that group last year, but I think they lost a lot more than the other two teams did. Arizona lost quite a bit, too. And you're looking at a bunch of teams that are in serious rebuilding mode. Out of that group, Gonzaga's not a lot to get an at-large bid by any means. Wisconsin, will probably be right in the middle of the Big Ten, and Arizona, you know, we lost their top two scorers from last year, Jordan Hill and Chase Budinger. New coach Kevin O'Neill and Sean Miller.
Yeah, Kevin O'Neill
at USC.
Yes,
they're in a transitional state too. So I think the big storyline at this Maui Invitational, aside from Maryland and Vanderbilt, is kind of a rebuilding mode for all these teams.
Right, breaking in new guys. I mean, when
looking at their roster, looks like they're in kind of rebuilding mode.
If you look at Gonzaga, Matt Bolden comes back. He was one of the, and Stephen Gray comes back as well. But look who they lost: Austin Day, Mika Downs, Josh Heitfeld, Ira Brown. You know, they lost four of their top five scorers coming out of last year. They're not, as you said, they're not a lock for the tournament. They're not a lock for the at-large bid. Arizona, as you mentioned, lost Jordan Hill and Chase Budinger. Wisconsin returns three of their top four scorers, Trevon Hughes, Jason Bohannon are back. They lost their leading scorer, Marcus Landry. But, you know, they look, and they're always a solid team, always a team that, you know, kind of squeaks in there, not squeaks in, but is in there solidly in the tournament. So I think you could expect them, if I had to guess right now, I would have them emerging from the bottom half of that bracket. Of course, Colorado's also in there. Tough to know what to expect from them. They finished 8-22 last year. They've never been a program with that much.
Tournament bid was in 2003, and that was a 10 seed. Other than that, they hadn't done anything this decade.
Mm-hmm. So, I think the bottom half of the bracket is more about, you know, which team can recover from the most losses. I mean, Wisconsin looks strongest right now just because they return the most. So I would expect them out of the bottom half of that bracket. And, you know what, if I had to guess, I'd expect Maryland out of the top half right there. But, you know, they can't overlook their second-round game.
Moving on from the Maui, we see one thing on the schedule this year that we have not really seen in past years, and that's a marquee standalone game. And Villanova is coming to D.C., not for a road game, but for a neutral game at the Verizon Center in early December. Villanova is going to be an instant Final Four contender, probably the best team in the Big East going into this season. And it was going to present some problems for Maryland. Well, and Villanova will likely be the favorite going into that game. But that's a big opportunity for Maryland and something that can make up for, you know, maybe not getting the big wins that they might have expected in Maui.
And I think it's nice to actually see a real big-time game come back to the Verizon Center for Maryland after playing GW. these years.
Yeah. After the BB&T had been such an elite tournament.
I mean, in the past, who have they played? They've played
Connecticut, Stanford.
Right. In the past, it's been, you know, well, it was a tournament back then. Now it's just standalone games. But that game right there, Maryland versus Villanova, I expect that to be pretty much a sellout at the Verizon Center. And depending how Maryland comes along after Maui in the early season, early part of their non-conference schedule, that could be one of the marquee games you're looking at in the non-conference, depending on how it all shakes out. And Villanova, I mean, you got to be impressed with, one, they returned Scotty Reynolds. They lost a couple guys. They lost Dwayne Anderson. Who's the other guy they lost?
They lost Shane Clark and Dante Cunningham.
Right. Now, those are big losses, but, you know, they returned Scotty Reynolds, a prolific scorer. And, you know, if you want to say that's a recruiting storyline, Maryland to recruit Scotty Reynolds, whatever, I don't know how much stock I put into that. But they also bring in, you know, two local guys from Montrose Christian, Isaiah Arnwood, who's a power forward, small forward type, and Muftal Yarrough, who's one of the highest-rated centers in the class. And those two guys are coming along with Dominic Cheek and a couple other guys for 2009 class. So that is one of the top freshman class in the country right there. And that's a lot to be excited about, you know, in terms of Villanova, if you're a Villanova fan. So that is, you know, a really intriguing matchup that I'm looking forward to.
I think when you look at the ACC Big Ten Challenge and you see Maryland's opponent, you know, when it first came out, I think some people might have been a little disappointed in what you – many people probably wanted a team that maybe either made the tournament last year from the Big Ten or was close to making it. I guess 7 of the 11 made it. But they get the team that finished dead last, and that's Indiana. They're going to Indiana, at least, so that's a little more favorable in the eyes of the committee, you know, assuming that we're going to be talking about the committee come next February and March. But they go to a team that certainly will be improved next year.
One hopes so.
Yeah, 5 wins. You would hope that you can improve on that.
With pretty much everybody coming back.
Yeah, plus and 6 new guys coming
right,
in.
6 new guys, a couple highly rated ones. So, you know, obviously people knew going in to last year that Tom Crean's recruiting, but his rebuilding project at Indiana would take a couple years. I wouldn't expect them to be a tournament team this year. You never know, but I wouldn't expect it to make such a huge jump from year to year. But, you know, when you're going to Bloomington, when you're going to that place, it's never going to be easy, especially in an atmosphere like that and in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, which also it's kind of ramped up a notch. And Indiana, their fans will come out to support no matter what. So that's another game Maryland can't really afford to overlook, and I don't think they will. That's never really been that big an issue going into this challenge. But I wouldn't call it necessarily a shoe-in win, you know, because it's still, as I said, on the road, with a team that you don't really know too much about because they bring in 6 new guys and then they have all these guys who, you know, was kind of mishmash last year.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana essentially became an expansion team last year, basically losing their entire roster from the previous year, from what was looking to be a pretty good team under the Kelvin Sampson reign, which ended pretty hastily, some might say. And they're probably a good 2 or 3 years away from really becoming a serious contender again. They certainly could be maybe in the NIT mix within a year or two, maybe the CBI mix, you know, for starters.
And who doesn't like another recruiting storyline? Because, of course, Indiana gets Maurice Creek, who played in the area, and Maryland had recruited with some intensity there for a little bit. But, you know, there are guys from this area all over. But if you want to look at that, too, and he will be on Indiana and figures to probably play quite a bit.
And I think one of the big things here is the road opportunity, something that they did not have last year in the non-conference portion of the schedule. But that's not the end of their road schedule. They actually go to a non-BCS school when they travel to UNC Greensboro early in January.
Now, those 2 road games they have, the last true road game Maryland has, would that be at Charlotte 2 years ago?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, because they played 2 straight years at home in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and they haven't had any home-and-homes since the UNC Charlotte game that was played down in Charlotte. So,
and we see that's what the committee really looks for at the end is, you know, the scheduling. The scheduling has become such a bigger part of this whole tournament process. It's not just who you beat, but who are you willing to schedule and who are you willing to challenge yourself with? I don't know if UNC Greensboro is really a challenge, but the fact that they're going to there, you know, adds a little bit to that.
It's similar to what they did against Charlotte, want to play in the arena that they'll play the ACC tournament in, kind of like a warm-up, a test run, so to speak. So that's probably their main motivation for going down there. And when you look at those two road games, as far as the RPI-wise, I mean, neither of those teams is going to be, you wouldn't expect just looking at it right now, they won't be top 100 teams because Indiana was, what, 216 last year, and UNC Greensboro was 316. So, you know, those aren't exactly going to be marquee road wins. But they're going to be important because Maryland has, they're facing a lot of lower RPI teams, at least last year. Charleston Southern, who's presumed to be on the schedule, came in last year at 325 in the RPI. Florida Atlantic, another team presumed to be on the schedule, 316. Winston-Salem State, another that was presumed, 331. Eastern Kentucky was fairly decent at 173. That's another team that's been presumably added to the schedule.
So that's really the middle of the pack team that you want to bring in to kind of even out that RPI.
Right.
When you bring
in
all those sub 300 teams.
Right. And you cannot have, again, like I said, with regards to the Maui Invitational, a lot of people expect Maryland to make the field pretty easily this year. I mean, you have people putting them in the top 25 already. You have, if you want to look at, you know, preseason bracketology. Has Joe Lenardi come out with one of those yet?
Yeah, he's changed it up a couple times, and they've been in the top half of each region. That
I think should everything go to plan, barring injuries, barring anything unforeseen, that Maryland should make the field with relative comfort this year. But still, you want to schedule teams that are not in the bottom of Division One or not in the 300s. Because, you know, worst comes to worst, you might have to depend on a fairly strong out-of-conference schedule, to kind of get your resume up and kind of get a higher seed. Now, it's not to say all these teams will be as bad as they were last year. I mean, when Maryland scheduled Charlotte, when they came to the Comcast Center last year, people didn't expect them to end up being so bad. You know, what was their RPI?
They were sub-200.
Yeah, they were a pretty bad team last year. Nobody really expected it be that bad. On the flip side, you know, you have your Americans who didn't turn out too bad, made the tournament. So you never know exactly what you're going to get. But neither of those teams, those kind of four or five teams we just mentioned there, are really that strong. But as I said, I don't think it'll hurt Maryland this year.
Where they could run into a problem is if they schedule more teams that were sub-300 last year. You don't want to run into a problem like Penn State had last year, where you pretty much solely have to rely on your conference performance, you know, for your resume. And because if they don't get, I mean, they're going to have to get more teams like American, maybe a Morgan State. Morgan State should be a pretty strong team again next year. You're going to have to bring in a few more teams that you know are going to be in the top 200. Because if you have all these cellar dwellers in the RPI, your numbers, you know, you might have a lot of wins, a pretty good record, but you're not going to have a whole lot to brag about in the non-conference portion of the schedule. And particularly with a weaker ACC next year. You know, the whole strength of schedule and the whole perception of an ACC team, particularly one on the bubble, is not going to be the committee won't be as forgiving, mm-hmm. I guess, of this team.
It's tough to tell from year to year, and you never know who's going to be that good, where they're going to end up on the RPI. But you have a general sense, and I don't want to criticize Maryland's scheduling yet. Of course, and, you know, even I don't want to criticize it at all because we haven't seen how it played out yet. And they still have about four to five, about roughly, spots to fill.
Right. And the one thing that we didn't address with the Chaminade game is, could this open up an opportunity to schedule an additional game, a la St. Mary's last year when they had the one exempt game still left and they scheduled Eastern Washington.
Likely won't be
at the
end of the season for Maryland. Right. You know, if it is, then they have some serious tournament issues at that time. But you know, maybe we'll see another home game in there. And as I said, I expect them to maybe bring in a CAA team, something like that, of that variety. I mean, some sort of local team to kind of fill out.
You'd like to bring in a team or two, you know, from the lower conferences that you'd expect that could win their league, mm-hmm. like a Vermont again. I don't know if Vermont's expected to win their league, but you want to bring in teams that you know are going to be respectable, NIT contender, maybe a CBI contender, somebody who's going to add just a little, you know, clout to that schedule.
Does New Hampshire ring a bell? Have we seen that name? I feel like we might have seen it. But we don't know. None of this is set in stone. Of course, the schedule doesn't come out too far. Yeah. Too far.
And we'll do this all again in 2 weeks, yeah. I think.
I think we have plenty of fun talking about this.
And we hope you do, too. If not, please tell us, and we will never do it
again. If you
want
to touch quickly on the ACC schedule, I mean, there's no surprises in terms of teams.
It's an exact duplication of what it was 3 years ago. I believe this is the plan they're sticking with until we hear otherwise, until there's some kind of realignment, which I don't think anybody's expecting. The two first next year, both home and away, NC State, FSU, Duke, Virginia, and Clemson. Teams that Maryland is just going to, Wake Forest, Va Tech, Boston College. Teams that Maryland is only hosting, Georgia Tech, UNC, and Miami. Now, again, ACC should be a little bit down less next year based on, you know, just the incredible amount of talent that departed from the conference this year. And Maryland certainly is getting a lot more hype as, you know, a potential top three team in this league. And, you know, it's hard to see where any of these teams stand now, having not seen anything from them.
I know, so this is so premature, yeah, what we're doing here. Yeah. It's the beginning of August, but still, I think when we look at kind of the split games, the one where either Maryland goes to or hosts, when you look at who they host at home, Georgia Tech, UNC, Miami, with what UNC loses, you know, you have to think that that would be a pretty, you know, I wouldn't say favorable game for Maryland, but that's one that they have a great opportunity to win. And they've beaten UNC at home the last two times they've played them. And Georgia Tech might have the most talent in the conference with what they return and what they bring in. Derek Favors, the number one recruit by some, another big guy there. In Miami, you know, they lost Jack McClinton, but still, they're always kind of in the mix, and Maryland has struggled with them. When you look at who they play on the road, Wake Forest, they, of course, bring back, you know, quite a bit, even though they lost James Johnson and Jeff Teague. But that's always a tough place to play. Virginia Tech, always a tough place to play for Maryland as well. BC should be a bit down after losing Tyrese Rice. But, you know, I don't want to prognosticate anything right now. Right. But when you look at the schedule, I mean, you have to say anywhere, you know, from 9 to 11 wins is pretty safe estimate.
Right.
Just looking at what Maryland has.
7-9 is probably not going to be good enough for an at-large in the ACC this year.
No.
Probably not even 8-8.
You're going to have to win, depending on non-conference, I'd say you have to win 9 games. As we know it right now, in the beginning of August, and that's way too premature, and we should never be doing this. But
we know that a lot of people like to...
Yeah, of course. And if we had to say it right now, that's how it would be, 9-7. Yeah. And I think we've beaten the schedule to death as much as we can in the beginning of August right now. So...
Well, so should we talk about like what's actually happened instead of what might happen? Do you want to do that?
What do you mean, what's actually happened?
Well, why don't we have the boss tell us?
Oh, so you want to go to recruiting now?
Oh, this is not my forte, but maybe,
okay. So you want to delve into recruiting right now?
I say let's go for it.
All right, let's go for it. We'll have Jeff on in a couple minutes. But as you know, the July evaluation period, a 20-day period, kind of split into two, beginning of July and end of July, ended. Just on July 31st, so just about a week ago. Maryland was out there in full force, as it usually is. All four coaches, Gary Williams and his three assistants, on the road. They've been to Cincinnati, Cleveland, South Carolina, L.A., Las Vegas, Arizona, North Carolina, everywhere, Florida. They've been all over the place this summer, the last few weeks. And... what they're looking at right now, and I think a lot of schools are looking at right now, is that they're trying to, I think, other than trying to show the kids love, so to speak, kind of go to all their top targets this games, they're really looking for a big man or two for this class for 2010. And we'll talk with Jeff, we'll break it down with Jeff in a bit, which guys they're looking at and how strongly they're looking at each and the chances with each. But I think that... Maryland and a lot of schools are really looking hard, just trying to get a big guy in there. I actually had a coach tell me at South Carolina at the Peach Jam, you know, every coach in the building is going, just looking at any guy who has any sort of size. 6'10 guy, you got coaches there no matter what his skill level is. Maybe that says something about college basketball today. Maybe it says something about the dearth of big man talent in this particular class. But that means that it's going to be tougher to land the top guys. So I think that was one of their main evaluations in the two recruiting periods in July. I think the four top guys that they have been showing love to, meaning that they kind of go to all their games, you have to say is their top target right now, who we'll get into again with Jeff, Michael Parker, the small forward kind of shooting guard combo, from Virginia. That's a guy they've been looking at the entire time, and he could be on the brink of a decision. We'll find out from Jeff. The other guy, Terrence Jones, a talented 3-4, more of a 4 guy, but he could play the 3-2 from Portland, Oregon. Actually, a former teammate at Jefferson High in Portland of Terrence Ross, Maryland's commitment. So there's a connection there. You also have Tobias Harris, and Jones has been recruited by everybody. He's had one of the biggest summers of any player out there, and maybe not as big as the next guy, Tobias Harris from New York, Long Island. He's been the biggest riser this summer, according to whatever scouting service you look at. He's an excellently skilled big man, four man, who Maryland has been associated with for some time, so they've been at all his games as well. And the last guy that they've been kind of evaluating, you know, maybe not as hard as the other guys, is Roscoe Smith, the Baltimore talent, who will be heading to Oak Hill next year, and they've looked at him a lot. It's difficult to know exactly where he stands in their priorities, but he's another really talented guy they're looking at. So I think those are the four main guys that they're looking at. They want to kind of land right now. And other than the big guys they're evaluating, I think those are the main targets that you're looking at right now.
All right. Well, that was a beautifully written foreword to the book that is our discussion with Jeff Ehrman.
And we're now joined by Jeff Ehrman.
Where are you from, Jeff?
Oh, I don't have a job. I just like to hang out on message boards most of the time.
Yeah, this guy just posts on
the man in charge.
Yeah, he posts.
I go by Hoagie, actually.
Yeah. Well, in reality, Jeff is, if you didn't know, he's the ringleader of the Inside MD Sports world, so to speak. And this right now, right before football camp starts, and right at the end of July, it's really a slow period right now. But just about a week ago, the basketball recruiting evaluation period ended. And it was, as usual, a busy summer for Maryland, looking at a couple more guys for 2010 and, as always, evaluating for the future. Jeff, what do you think are the big storylines that came out of the, let's go with both the evaluation periods in July, the early one and then the one that just ended this past week?
Well, I think out of the most recent period, the biggest story is Terrell Stoglin, point guard, is committed to Maryland, who, you know, back when he committed early this summer, I guess it was, or maybe late spring, was somewhat of an unknown, especially nationally and more so on the East Coast, and he's really earned his stripes late in the summer, had a really good showing out in Vegas, and some services have him as a top 50 player now. So that, from a Terps fan point of view, I think that would be the biggest and most reassuring news that Terrell has really proved himself against, you know, because of the questions about his level of competition he was playing out in Tucson, Arizona. From the early period, I would say, well, obviously Terrence Ross committing was the big news of the early summer and spring. I mean, that was a huge pickup, maybe the biggest one in several years for Maryland recruiting. Going back to the early period, I don't know. I mean, you were out and about. What do you think was the big story? I don't know that there were a lot of huge revelations. I think it was more of a, building a starting point where the staff was out there building up their list of prospects and kind of prioritizing.
I think probably the biggest story, if you want to say it's really a story, but it was kind of a thing a lot of colleges were doing, or a lot of coaches were out there. They're just, everybody was looking for a big man. And that was the one theme of this evaluation period, especially for Maryland. I mean, every other day during those 20 days they were on the road, it seemed like a new big man emerged. I mean, lately you got, just recently this Josh Henderson kid from Roanoke, Virginia, a big 7-footer down there who Maryland has supposedly offered. That's one guy they've been looking at. I mean, they've been looking at this Alex Kirk kid from New Mexico. That's probably not going to happen. DeMontre Harris from Fayetteville, North Carolina. While he has Maryland in his top five and is planning a visit there, I think a lot of people think he'll end up, you know, at South Carolina or Wake Forest or one of those places down there. And, of course, James Johnson, who played with Stoglin. But then again, everybody is on top of him, and he really is inundated by just college calls and all that. So I think they're, you know, and, of course, Hippo, who we reported first that he was looking to commit to Maryland, but whether or not he has an actual offer, that's still up in the air, or a committable offer, that's still up in the air. So I think, you know, it's tough to say if they really kind of made too much progress on that front over the two evaluation periods, and I think they're still looking around to see who else is available.
It's pretty clear that there's not a lot of good big men available, and it shows in the wide net that they're casting. And you know, like you said, these guys like DeMontre Harris, who's highly unlikely to leave the South, and James Johnson, who everybody in the country seems to be after. Those are going to be really tough guys to get. You know, they might have a little bit better shot at Johnson than Harris, but it's slim pickings out there for the big guys.
Jeff, two of the guys that we've been looking at, that you've been looking at over the past couple months, have been Roscoe Smith and Michael Parker. Tell us where those two guys stand right now.
Well, Parker, I think, is starting to get a lot closer to making a decision. It could be next week, could be in the next few weeks, could be tomorrow for all I know. I mean, he's a guy who all along had kind of insisted he wanted to wait till the spring, and all along I kind of, just from talking to him and the people around him, I had a feeling that it really was unlikely to stretch out that far, and I think he's starting to close in on a decision sometime soon, with Maryland most likely being the leader, Virginia and Southern Cal also on the list in Kentucky, which I don't believe he has an offer there. So Maryland's in really good shape there with him. He's obviously tight with Terrence Ross, which helps a lot. And, you know, I'd say there's a better chance he'll be a Terp than he won't. But, of course, you know, nothing is set in stone. With Roscoe, that's a tough call. He's got a lot of interest as well. And he's a guy who clearly enjoys the process, and you know, the people around him enjoy the notoriety involved with it. And so I don't think he's looking to make an early decision. And the other thing about his camp, so to speak, is that they're very focused on making sure he's in a position where he's not going to be forced to play in the post or forced to play with other guys who fit his same skill set. So they're going to wait it out and see, you know, who else commits to all of these schools. So I don't think we'll know anything on Roscoe for a while, and if Parker is to commit to Maryland, I think that would probably be a pretty big shot to Maryland's chances, but you never know.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I think that's a big topic of discussion, or at least over the last couple of weeks. Maryland has two commitments, and depending on whether or not Jerome Burney is, you know, what his situation ends up being, if he gets a medical scholarship or something like that, they have 4 to 5 scholarships to work with for 2010. And a lot of people think, you know, if they get Parker, does that, you know, throw Roscoe Smith off the board, or does that lessen Maryland's interest in, I don't know, you know, the other guys, Tobias Harris and Terrence Jones, who are, you know, built like four men but want to play the three and have the skills to play the three like Parker does. I don't really have a great read on whether or not, one, if Michael Parker commits, those other three guys, you know, Harris, Smith, and Jones, would that stop their interest in Maryland, and vice versa? Where does Maryland turn once they got their guy, Parker, whom they've targeted as their number one guy for, I'd say, pretty much the entire spring and summer?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would probably hurt more with Roscoe. I think he probably pays a little bit closer attention to that. I know Jones is following that as well. The other recruits coming into the schools that are recruiting him. But at the same time, I think they're, you know, they could definitely be cohesive together. And I think Jones could be a face-up four-man more than a three, whereas Roscoe really seems to consider himself a three. And, of course, you know, there's no real true boundaries between these positions. It's more, you know, us and coaches and the kids themselves labeling 4, 3, 2, 1, you know. So I think it obviously would hurt, but Parker's a guy who's a 6'4", 6'5", slasher type, and then you have Jones, who's, you know, probably 6'8", 6'9". So they might both be in between positions, whereas Parker would be in between the 2 and the 3, and Jones is in between the 3 and the 4. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. Obviously, everybody wants Terrence Jones as well. He's had a huge summer, and looks like a surefire McDonald's All-American now, so I don't think he'll be doing anything anytime soon either, though.
You think, you wrote about another guy they've been going after, Josh Gosser, I guess is pronounced, from Wisconsin.
Gosser, that's right.
Kind of a shooting guard type. Do you think that they need a third guard in this class? You know, they have two coming in. You know, when they have such pressing needs for big guys and kind of the four and three type guys.
Yeah, that's a tough call. I mean, you're obviously losing Vasquez and Hayes after this year, which is a huge hole to fill in. And you've already got two guys who appear to be really, really talented and maybe ready-made to make a pretty good contribution right away. Then at the same time, you know, you've got Adrian Bowie. He'll be a junior. You'll have to replace him as well as Cliff Tucker. And in the front court, you know, last year you grabbed two big guys in Jordan Williams and James Padgett. So assuming they work out to the level of expectation or at least somewhere close to that, maybe that's not a huge need. You probably need at least one big guy. But to me, a more glaring need is a wing, a true, you know, a bigger wing guy who can slash and do it from the perimeter. That's not really something, you know, you look at the guards, the combo slash wing types that they have right now. Sean Mosley and Cliff Tucker and Adrian Bowie are all really nice players, and I can't wait to see them and their progression this year. But they're not, you know, built in that same mold as a Parker, who's a big-time athlete with great size from the wing, who can slash and also shoot. Not that those guys can't slash or shoot, but I think you know what I mean. To me, landing Parker would be a huge get or a similar wing. So I don't know if the big man is really the top need. I mean, I guess you definitely need one more. There's no question about that. But if Padgett and Williams pan out, I don't think it's, you know, a dire circumstance anyways.
No, a lot of fans are excited about these two guys that have already committed. And you mentioned going after guys like Jones, who will be McDonald's All-American. How is Maryland being received now in the recruiting circles? Are they considered a major player again?
I think the prestige has been bumped up a little bit this summer just through hard work and getting out there and on the trail maybe a little bit more vigorously than the past several years. And so the coaches obviously deserve credit for that. I mean, Maryland as a program will always have that respect of being a major winner, an ACC program that's won national championship in recent memory. But at the same time, you know, recruiting prestige doesn't necessarily correlate with your program's reputation, you know, 100%. So, you know, they're not going to recruit like North Carolina or Duke anytime soon. But then again, who does? I think they're making big strides, and grabbing the two guys that they've gotten already is a huge start.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch, at least over the next, you know, couple months. You know, in-home visits could start up again in about a month and a half. So we'll see where they'll put their focus there. But you never know what to expect when it comes to Maryland basketball recruiting. And even the two commits they got in this class were kind of unexpected commitments at the time. So tomorrow, Michael Parker could decide. In a month, he could decide. Who knows who else will decide in between then. But I think Jeff has given us a pretty good recap of what went down in July and what to expect in the coming months. Jeff, we'll definitely catch up with you again. This is, after all, your show, in a way.
Thanks for having me on it.
You're the boss.
Yeah, you're the boss. So, we'll see what happens. Obviously, football is a focus of ours starting next Monday. And, of course, that doesn't mean the news stops with basketball recruiting. We'll keep on top of that. And the Maryland State rankings will debut tomorrow, Friday, or today, Friday, whenever this goes up. Top 10 for 2010, top 5 for 2011. So that'll be a nice little thing to talk about tomorrow when those go up. But we'll catch up with you in the next couple months, weeks, days, I don't know. We'll see.
Beautiful.
All right. Well, we thank Jeff very much for coming on and enlightening us a little bit more on the recruiting situation. And we're going to take a break next week, but we'll get back into the football stuff in 2 weeks when we'll actually have some practices, probably some season-ending injuries to talk about, and some, you know, nothing good usually comes in the first couple of weeks of practice as far as news that is leaked out to the public. And so, but we'll actually have some player sound, some fridge sound for you, and kind of get the lowdown on some of those position battles that we were discussing last week. And so, you know, let us know what you want to hear from us, and Seth will be at practice every day.
Go to the site for, you know, the comprehensive fall camp breakdowns, practice reports, the whole everything we could bring you, we'll bring you at that time on the site, video, audio. We'll try and hit it all. We'll also try in 2 weeks when we come back to get some guests on the air. We'll have plenty of player interviews from football to get to, with coaches and whatever. And we may even have a basketball recruit too, but we don't know for sure on that. So stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
For Seth, I'm Mike. You've been listening to Inside MD Sports Radio on InsideMDSports.com.